All right, welcome to another edition of the pod. It's the Pitch Invaders podcast on December 11th, 2014. How we doing, everybody? A lot of stuff to get to today. General Manager Mike Burns will be on the show. Andrew Wiebe of MLSsoccer.com and MLS Extra Time, which you can catch on Sirius XMFC, will be on the show breaking down everything from yesterday's MLS expansion draft. Mike's going to recap the season with us, talk about a little bit of the future, too. Because we can look into 2015 a little bit now, right? Why not? It's on the other side. It's only in a couple weeks. Throwback Thursday to the max right now, by the way. Down! If you didn't appreciate wrestling in the 90s, I can't speak to you. Sorry. If there was five things that I would say in the 90s were great, I will always... Pika, can you hear me in there? No, he can't hear me. I will always say... Wrestling, WWE in the 90s was untouchable. McMahon versus Bischoff. The Monday Night Wars were great, fun. But I mean, I'm just looking at like the, you just look at the superstars that came out of that are mainstream movie stars. Rockin' Austin number one and two. That's an impressive list of characters there. And it was so entertaining. I don't care how people feel about the WWE. I loved it. I don't love it now, but I loved it back then, and it was great. Because you can't tell me when The Rock would go up against Triple H in a title match that you weren't locked in and tuned in. And watching the guy getting clocked over the head with a chair was entertaining. Watching The Rock lay a rock bottom in the middle of the ring and people going absolutely nuts. It was great to watch. It was television. It was great television. It was great entertainment. And they fooled everybody because they sold it as sports. That's what's great. It's great. I got to have a WWE conversation with somebody one day. Can you hear me in there yet, Pika? He still can't hear me. We're working on headphone stuff in here today. We're trying to fix things in the studio. And I'm trying to get his attention. Is he paying attention to me? Does he hear me? No, he doesn't. This is all podcast stuff that we work on a daily basis. All right, we're in studios. We're currently and always getting our studios up to top notch. You cannot leave your studios unattended. And plus, we're growing 1510 WMEX every day here. So, you just got to stay locked in. That's the key. All right. Let's get into the nitty-gritty before we have Mike Burns on the show, because I don't want to have to say much before we get into them. Mullins is gone, and Mullins had fun in New England. Pat Mullins was a great draft pick for the team, considering the fact they bypassed him originally in the Super Draft when they picked up Steve Newman first, and then they went to Pat Mullins. So, New England won big time, as I've always said this year, in the Super Draft, and hopefully they can continue that success going into 2015. But Mullins grew in New England. Mullins had fun. He certainly came into his own as a professional. And I think for what he did in the Cup Final against LA in only 15 minutes of action, he showed his worth. And it was a draft pick that went right out the window for New England, courtesy of MLS expansion draft. What goes around comes around, I guess. Revs get Jermaine Jones by way of a blind draw. Mullins goes to your competition by way of expansion draft. Still think if there wasn't a blind draw in the mix and you had to put Chicago and New England on the table, I'm taking New England every single time. But Mullins going second in the expansion draft to New York City FC with a list of plenty of qualified players on the board absolutely says something about the status of Pat Mullins as a soccer player. It might not be much considering we don't know the result of the draft, what the result of the draft is going to be. But he's clearly shown something to Jason Christ and the brass down there in New York. People don't want to look at soccer at a numbers game, but you're going to be disappointed to know that in New England, the Revs are going to lose a rookie who is good enough to play in 21 matches this year, start 14, and added 4 goals. Again, to new soccer fans, welcome, that are saying, well, that's not much. You have to look at what he did to earn close to 1,200 minutes this year. He's a young forward, and one that in the right system will absolutely flourish. Now, here's the thing, quickly. I'm not saying the Revs weren't the right system, but we're talking about the freaking New York Yankees of MLS. All right, this team is partially owned by the New York Yankees, and they're owned by one of the most trigger-happy business teams in ML and all of European football in general, Manchester City. They have the ability to, I mean, look, they have his training partner up top is going to be David Villa. David Villa, who won La Liga, who's won Copa del Rey, who's played with Lionel Messi. Oh, yeah, and he won the World Cup. A sponge like Mullins learning from guys like that? Oh, yeah, don't forget that 10-day stay in Manchester, by the way. Hey, guys, instead of going to training camp in somewhere warm, we're going to take you right to the heat of the storm where football is growing is going on right now. And we're going to take you over to Europe, and we're going to take you to Manchester, where they're going to be in European competition, by the way, still. Yes, we're going to compete for UEFA Champions League still. Well done, Manchester City. Keeping yourselves alive. We'll talk about that later. But in the midst of a very, very competitive season, these guys are going to get the best training possible. And Mullins is going to take that in. It's a tough loss, but it's nothing New England could do to prevent. It's just, you can't, listen, don't try to come at any of these coaches here. I think, you know, also the certain situations with Mullins might have led New York City and Orlando away. Listen, this was a very interesting draft, and, you know, Andrew Weeby's going to get into it later. This was unpredictable in how teams were moving. There's a lot of questions behind these decisions, Tony Cascio being one of them. So the Revs took a risk, and they lost. Upside is you did not lose Steve Newman or A.J. Soares. Newman was out automatically protected right after Mullins went, and A.J. Soares apparently has some very big European interests right now. So, and we'll talk about that with Mike Burns. I'm happy that they don't lose Newman. I'm definitely happy they don't lose Soares. I'm still hoping that they can renegotiate a contract. I'm interested in Tony Taylor, though. Tony Taylor, because, yeah, he might be a low-salary guy, but you took him over some pretty impressive names that were out there for both teams. So New York City, do they see something in Tony Taylor, or is he just expendable? But I want to go move into more Revs, how they protected guys in this year. And I think they made the correct choices in who they protected. Bobby being at the top of the list. Kevin Alston being in there. Especially Alston. Depth in defense is going to be huge next year. Alston is a player who's still getting his chance to be an everyday guy here in New England, I'm thinking, too. He could be in the 18 every day next year. Or every week. Barnes has played himself out of the starting 11 role. I think if you lose Darius Barnes, I'm upset because I'm a Duke guy and I love to see the Blue Devils. But let's be honest, if you had to be nitpicky, which you have to be this time of year in order to get good, in order to get back to that stage, Barnes lost you both games against Columbus, against a team that had your number in the regular season and you were able to figure out in the playoffs. So to avoid those problems again going into 2015, is Barnes a guy that you want on your roster to fill in for games here? Should somebody get hurt? Or would you rather pay somebody else? Again, I don't know if money matters much, and I know that's going to sound crazy coming out of with where the crafts are. I don't know if it's money as much as it is, hey, it's more talent than anything else. You know, Alston makes more than Darius Barnes. That's why I'm saying they're not necessarily worried about the money. They're worried about the talent that they're going to have coming back next year. And the talent is, and it's a short roster. It's a competitive roster. It's nothing against Darius Barnes, but it's going to be a competitive roster going into 2015. Everybody's fighting for this spot right now. And unfortunately, he's a guy that's going to be left out. And many of you will turn around to me and say, Tommy, Kevin Alston's injury prone. This is true. But there is a lot more invested on paper to me with Alston than there is Barnes. And they're going to give him a shot when he's healthy to prove that worth, which is a similar situation to Charlie. If you think about it, it paid off with Davies. And if you got to make adjustments in the back going into 2015, a.k.a. moving Andrew Farrell to center back should A.J. Soares go, you have somebody at right back that knows that position. Darius Barnes, left back, center back guy. Played right back, filled in for Kevin Alston, but I think there's more invested with Kevin Alston. Again, I'm sorry. Love Duke, love the college. Coach K is legendary. Jay played for Coach K. Go to hell, Carolina, go to hell. Can't stand those Tar Heels. But this is going to bring me to Bobby now, because now this will bring me to the protected guys. Check. This will bring me to the protected guys. Bobby Shuttleworth deserves to be protected. You know, David Wilson from ESPNFC.com gave me these numbers last night on Twitter for Bobby, that he's 16th in save percentage in the league. And 47 and has a 47% passing accuracy, which is worse on the team by over 20%. For the record, last night Squawka had him at currently 77%, and the team at has it currently with the team at 77% passing accuracy, and Bobby at 52%, which is still technically 20%, but the gap is still greater than 50%. You know, Bobby's a better keeper than people would like to believe. People, you have to remember, Bobby, about Bobby, I'm sorry about this, some beeping going on in the background you might hear right now. We just sort of blew up and had the station die quickly, but now came back to life. Bobby just finished his first full season in MLS as a starting goalkeeper. You have to give him time. I think Bobby's a guy that you're ready to kill, and I think that's the bad approach to have it, because I think if I understand that it's a different game in terms of keepers and stuff with soccer to hockey per se, but I'm confident in keeping a guy who's been in the system and knows what the particulars are in communicating with the defense, then bringing some random new guy in. You know, you're bringing new guys year after year after year after year, and it's not going to work. If you're going to go down that road, you start with Matt Reese, then you bring in Bobby, then you bring in Joe Schmo, then you bring in Sally Schmo. Like, come on. Bobby is bred for the New England Revolution. I mean, he sat behind Matt Reese for amounts of years. I mean, his overall numbers aren't that bad. I like his winning numbers. I like the fact in the past two seasons he's 23-23-9. That's 500. Lifetime, he's 29-33-13. That's not bad. He's only 27. That's the guy I'm keeping right now. I like the plus nine in the win column from 2013 to 2014. That's why Bobby deserves a shot. That's why you keep Bobby around. And then finally, there's AJ. And people are either going to like him or you're going to hate him. You're not on the fence about the guy. The guy's game is either going to intrigue you or make you want to hurl a streamer at the guy during the game. And I like AJ. I like AJ a lot. I think AJ was snubbed by the fan base and the fan base of the league as a whole. I thought AJ could have been at least a little bit higher in MLS All-Star voting. The whole AJ thing going overseas, I think, was to scare away Orlando and New York City. the idea of AJ going away bothers me, but I don't see it coming to fruition. And here's why. Because I think the New England Revolution realized his importance, and I hope to get Mike's thoughts on it, but I think he's more valuable in the back than Jose Gonsalves. Jose won't be the captain going into 2015, I don't think. I think the defense needs a little bit of a shakeup, and you can shake it up with Jose and still be successful in keeping a guy like AJ Soares, who did a lot this year, I think, at center back. I think him and Andrew Farrell could be a very good pairing. And if you wanted to go out there and splash the cash for a new guy on this roster, I'm going in two avenues. Either you get somebody for the back four, or you get a striker up top. Those are the only two places I'm going right now. But we shall see how it pans out over the next several weeks here. I mean, it's a quick turnaround, people. We're back at MLS Superdraft on January 15th. That's a month in about 4 days. So, you know, don't think that thing slows down. Again, I don't know what people are talking about when they say this thing just happens to go away until we're already back in preseason. Are you ready? I'm not. I barely got sleep last night overlooking these MLS expansion draft rosters. And it's really nothing to lose sleep over, but I'm mulling them over. And I'm looking at Donovan Ricketts, who goes to Orlando. And then Ned Grabovoy, who goes to New York. Large RSL. Okay, not large. But there is a RSL shining through. There we go. RSL's guys are shown here. Ned Grabovoy, Chris Wingert. Wingert's a New York guy anyways. But Christ knows the familiar with the system. Just made sense. We got some active moves going on, though, with New York City FC. Sal Zizzo's on the move now. We're going to talk more with Andrew Wiebe about this in a couple minutes. I want to save that. Let's bring in Mike Burns, all right? Let's get ready to bring in Mike here. We talked with Mike Burns on the pod this morning, recapping the season. I want to play that interview for you now. Here's Mike. So let's jump to the phone line right now and welcome a general manager of your New England Revolution, Mike Burns. Mike, happy holidays. Welcome onto the show. How are you?
Thank you, Tom. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good. Not too bad. A lot to be proud of this year. You guys finished at the end of the season second. You're now five-time Eastern Conference champions. I mean, you captured an entire region for more than just a month. I mean, for you in general, watching this unfold throughout the year, how's it been managing the emotions?
No, I mean, it's certainly been a roller coaster of a season. If you look at the whole season, going back to when we started preseason in January, and we got off to a terrible start in Houston, and then, you know, we took us two or three games to score a goal, and then we went on a streak of wins, and then followed by a long streak of losses, followed by a strong ending or a strong third of the season, and a really good run in the playoffs. So, all in all, to have a chance to play for a championship is fantastic, but there's certainly a sense of disappointment as well to having a chance to win an MLS Cup and playing in the final and losing. So there's a lot of emotions this year, certainly for everyone, for the staff and for the coaches and for the players. But I think if you look at the whole, you can't say it wasn't a successful season, but there's still always that little bit of disappointment having not won the final game.
So there's a short turnaround in the year. You know, just as we say goodbye to another season, we got the Super Draft, right on January 15th. And I'm not looking towards, like, you know, who you're looking at and all the training camp stuff and going down to Bradenton. But, like, how do you, with going this far in the playoffs, be able to manage, you know, all your other properties that you're trying to keep going? Because this is a time of year where you guys, I believe, are successful. I've said it in the past. I mean, you guys have splashed on guys like Kellen Rowe, Tierney. So, you know, how do you manage being able to monitor what's going on in the country while having all the success going on around you?
Yeah, this by far has been the most challenging off season that that I've certainly had, and I think I can speak for our coaches as well. And listen, I'd take this problem, quote-unquote problem, every
right,
year.
Yeah.
But when you play on December 7th and the combine starts on January 8th, and you have 1 month to not only review and assess all coaches and staff and players and contracts and options and all those sorts of things that come with a normal off season, and you throw in having to have player meetings immediately following the MLS Cup, because the following day we're required to have not only to MLS contract options exercised and not exercised, but also a protected list for an expansion draft with two teams, which took place yesterday. And then a re-entry draft on Friday, and another re-entry draft on Thursday. There really is no off-season, and this is as a busy time as we've ever had in the shortest amount of time that we've ever had. So it's been a lot. And honestly, Tom, I feel like there's been part of us that hasn't even been able to digest the game itself, because there's been so many things that we've had to deal with immediately thereafter.
Yeah, one of those things that you're dealing with right now is losing one of your draft picks in Pat Mullins. I know that's a real hard punch to take right after the game last Sunday, but what was it, do you think, that New York City FC saw in Pat Mullins that they decided to take him so high?
Probably the same thing we saw on him when we decided to draft him in the first round last year. I mean, I've said this yesterday, and for the good of the league and the good of the game, expansion is great. It means our league is continuing to thrive and improve and all that sort of stuff. But for us, for an individual club, for the Revs, it came at a really bad time, because the coaching staff, there's a lot of people that put a lot of time into trying to construct a team that not only did we feel as capable of winning games on the field, but it was really a conscious effort to try to create as deep a team as possible. And we feel over the last couple of years we've done that. So for expansion to come this year, we had a strong feeling we were going to lose two players because of our depth. And that's one of the reasons we felt we were successful this year, is because Jay had a lot of players to choose from. We feel like we've created a little bit of competition at almost every spot on the field. So listen, we're disappointed to lose both those players. And we didn't know who for sure, which two players we would lose, but we did feel that because of our depth, we were going to lose two, and so this definitely impacts us. And but having said all that, we knew it was coming. You can only protect so many guys, and so we didn't want to lose either of those players, but we have to deal with it, and we have to move on, and we wish both those players well.
What is the situation with AJ Soares? He was bypassed in the expansion draft yesterday. We've heard rumors that there's maybe some contract negotiations going on right now with him. You had to have been relieved that New York City FC and Orlando didn't take him yesterday as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've this has been public, so we've made AJ a bona fide offer. He is out of contract, and we believe he has strong desires to go to Europe, and I think everyone else realizes that. So he is certainly a player that we've loved having. He's certainly a player we would love to have again, whether it's next year or at some point in the future. He's been tremendous for us in the locker room, on the field, but it's a situation where sometimes players play out their contract and want to test or see what other opportunities may exist, and we respect that. We respect AJ as a person and a player. He's always been honest with us and always given us everything he had. So, like I said, we hope he's back. We certainly understand if he wants to go to Europe and play in Europe, and hopefully there'll be a time when he'll return either in the short term or long term and play for the Revs again.
Bobby's just a small piece of a big puzzle that you guys have to figure out right now, because there's a new perception about you guys worldwide. How do you think teams are looking at you in the upcoming January transfer window?
I hope there's a certain level of respect for our players and for our organization. And like I said, I don't want to say what we've accomplished this year, because we look at it as more than 1 year. But I think anytime you have any teams that get to the final, there's kind of, you're more under a microscope because you're having a certain level of success.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys just took it up to another level this year. And staying with your defense, I want to backtrack a little bit, because I've skipped over Bobby Shuttleworth, because I found it interesting that he was protected. And I think it's great that he was protected, because in a league where goalkeepers are so tough to come by nowadays, especially ones that are bred in a specific system. How do you feel he's progressed this year? You know, what are your final thoughts on Bobby? And, you know, where does he stand going into 2015?
I mean, I think he solidified himself as a number one in this league. I think this was a really important year for him. He served as a backup for quite a few years and as an understudy to Matt, and he's worked very closely with Remy to improve his game each and every year. And, you know, he won the starting spot. And I think if you look at the whole season, he had a very successful season. And so for him, and I'm sure he would agree, he wants to continue to improve and get better and play. You know, this was the first year that he really was a number one and played from start to finish the whole season. So I think he just wants to probably improve on that and continue to be a number one for years to come. And I don't see any reason why he won't be able to achieve that, certainly with the experience he gathered this season.
With the numbers, do you think that just progressively gets better over time? And you have to, I mean, yeah, it was one full season. People are ready to kill him because of certain stats, but I like the one that says +9 in the win column personally.
Yeah. I mean, I think people got to also keep in mind that this is Bobby's first full year as a starting goalkeeper in MLS, and goalkeepers tend to get better with age and with experience. And so all the experience that Bobby garnered this season, we feel is going to be helpful for him down the road, and hopefully he's going to be in New England for the foreseeable future. But certainly for his first year as a starting goalkeeper in MLS, and you know, to be the starting goalkeeper in the MLS Cup final, is you can't say that Bobby didn't have a really good year.
All right, Mike Burns, general manager, with us for a couple more minutes here on the Pitch Invaders podcast. So Jermaine Jones was the first step. He was that needle pusher in the middle of the season that the Crafts have been talking about and the fans that have wanted for a while. You know, you said that you've heard, when we talked back in July, we talked about how much less we hear designated player talk opposed to past years. With the success of Jermaine, does that change the way you do business at all? Or is it just you stay to the course and you finally had one pan out, but this was the one that you decided to go after and it worked?
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, I said this during the press conference when we had it, when Jermaine came to Boston, is for us, and if you look at the history of the Revs, I mean, Jermaine Jones was and is a signature signing for us, without question. I think if you look at our team, what Jermaine, and I'll get into it in a minute, but what we felt we had before Jermaine was a solid team. A little young, a little inexperienced, a little inconsistent. If you look at before Jermaine arrived, we went on a win streak, went on a long losing streak. And what Jermaine brought to us was, I don't want to say a certain level of credibility, but he brought almost like a calming influence in the locker room with his experience. And we knew of Jermaine a lot as the player. What we didn't know is Jermaine as a person. And that exceeded, I think, all of our expectations in terms of his work ethic, his competitiveness, his desire to win. And he kind of took us to another level. And we needed that on the field, in that certain spot, on that position on the field, which obviously helped us. But he was another leader in the locker room, and having a young team, that was invaluable. So he brought a lot of what we were missing, both in the locker room, on the field. And I think that showed the level of confidence in our guys kind of raised as he joined us. And I don't think anyone thought we were going to go on the run that we went on at the end of the year and into the playoffs, but we knew we were a much better team when we acquired him.
Does your business strategy change in terms of how you go after designated players with the success of Jermaine, though?
I mean, I've said this before, and some people get a little frustrated with it, but it truly is. When you're talking designated players, it's really on a case-by-case basis. So I wouldn't say we sit back and say we're going to completely rehaul and change the way we operate and do business. You know, because at the beginning of the year, if this was 12 months ago, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to foresee that we were going to sign Jermaine Jones. So those situations are unique in and of itself. But certainly we will always be open to this designated player or players, and you know, this was just an opportunity that was too good to pass.
You mentioned the American players before. A large number, except with the exception of Jose, every guy on the starting 11, like I said, without the exception of Jose, is an American import. Are you going to plan to go down this road continuously and keep on growing the American talent pool? Because, I mean, the way I look at it now with where – everybody else is going in MLS. You guys are really building the foundations, or at least trying to, and finding guys to build our national team pool. So are you guys going to continue to keep on growing with a lot of American players on this roster, you think?
I mean, I think you always have to have a certain number of international players. They just bring sometimes they can bring a little bit something different than what you have. But we take our academy program very, very seriously. And, you know, we've signed Scott, and we've signed Diego, and we hope to sign more players. But it's important to us. We're trying to sign players from our academy that we feel can make an impact. We don't want to just sign guys from our academy to say, oh, we've signed 4 or 6 or 10 guys. That doesn't really matter to us. What matters to us is we sign the right guys that we think can impact the first team. And I think if you look over the last couple of years, without question, both Diego and Scott have had a major impact on our first team. So we'll continue to look in that avenue. And we've always taken the draft seriously. So, and I mean the college, the super draft, and we'll continue to do that. I think if you look at the history of the Revs, a large majority of our top players have come through the draft, whether it's Shelry or Taylor or, you know, Pat Noonan, Michael Parkhurst, Clint Dempsey, you know, and on, the list goes on and on and on. But we've, Kellen Rowe, Andrew Farrell recently, you know, we take that seriously. And those players have made a big impact on our team and our team's success over the history of the Revs. So it's something we'll continue to take seriously. Having said all that, we understand the draft is changing because more and more players are coming through MLS Academy and homegrown system. So while it's certainly changing, I think you saw in the last couple of years, to add a player of Kellen Rowe's ability and Andrew Farrell's ability have made our team better.
Speaking of college kids, you got to be happy with what Providence is doing, huh? Final Four this weekend. It's great.
No, it's great, and we have some homegrown kids down there, and we couldn't be happier for them. So it's they're on a tremendous run, and I actually texted Dominic Machado the other day and said, "Listen, I hope congrats, keep it going, and I hope you have 2 more wins in you." So it's fantastic for the for Providence's program. It's fantastic for the guys that we know pretty well, and hopefully they're going to get a couple more wins, and it won't be easy though.
Does it say something about the region, Mike? Does it say something about how far we're coming and like how much better we're getting? You guys go to an MLS Cup final. We got a team in this region going to the Final Four. Your academy kills it. I mean, the U15s. I was down in Milton this fall, and they were unbelievable. Same thing with the U18s last spring. So, I mean, does it say something now? The perception's obviously got to be just completely shifted.
I hope so. I mean, I remember, and this was a long time ago when I was growing up, you know, you always used to hear about soccer hotbeds, you know, New Jersey or California or Florida. And while there still are some areas that tend to produce a little bit more, we think that we have an area here that we're rich in talent. And so we're trying to cultivate that as best we can and get players in and get the top players in. And it's a unique experience, an opportunity for our guys. But the exposure that our kids have in our academy program, the level of competition that they have, the coaching that they get, the facilities, you know, I'm not trying to be biased, but we think what we can provide, no one else in New England can. And so and we also try to incorporate a lot of our academy players. Like last year, we brought a couple players with us to our preseason in Arizona. And what an opportunity for some of our young kids to be able to train and play with our pros. And so we're trying to integrate that as best we can. It'll never be a pure overlap, but we don't want them to be exclusive of each other either. So we felt like we've come a long way, and Brian Scales has done an unbelievable job with our program, and it just continues to get better every year.
He's Mike Burns, general manager of your New England Revolution. Mike, we're probably not going to talk until the next year in 2015. So happy New Year, happy holidays to you and your family, and thank you for a great season. Really, it was a lot of fun. This is my first year, as you know, probably you know, covering the team and stuff, and this was just an absolute pleasure being able to sit back and watch you guys. So thank you for the fun. A happy New Year again, and we'll talk to you in 2015.
Same to you. Thanks, guys.
All right, so thanks to Mike Burns right there. Let's jump quickly back to the phone lines right now and welcome in Andrew Wiebe of MLSsoccer.com and MLS Extra Time, which you can catch on Sirius XM FC, Channel 94, every Tuesdays and Fridays at noon. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Glad to be here.
Yes, thank you for joining the pod this morning. It's amazing that we're already through another season. It feels like we just started in March. It just feels like it. The weather, you know what I mean? It's gray to start the year. It's gray to end the year.
I have no idea what you mean. I'm exhausted. It's been a long year. I'm happy it's at a conclusion. You know, obviously the World Cup adding on some extra mileage for me. But, boy, it doesn't slow down at all, does it? You hit MLS Cup, and that feels like it's 3 weeks in the past already with all these player moves, expansion draft, favor draft, reentry draft coming up. trades galore. It's there's no rest for the weary, shall we say, in Michigan soccer.
No, I mean it's you put your head to your pillow and then you wake up and you're right back at it again for sure. Initially, what are your thoughts on the MLS Cup final? We saw the ratings numbers yesterday. It was the second highest rated MLS Cup final ever, according to the release. So, what are your thoughts about how everything just went down before we get into expansion draft conversation?
I think the occasion itself was magnificent. You know, StubHub Center, LA fans, New England fans, everybody in attendance did a great job. It was one of those events that felt like it had some real cachet. And then, you know, maybe it's just because last year I was huddled with a blanket and about 15 layers in Kansas City. But the beautiful weather, the beautiful scenery, unfortunately, the game itself, not so beautiful. And I think that's the one thing that everybody will look at this MLS Cup and say, boy, I sure wish the quality on the field was a little bit better. For some reason, these two teams just not sharp enough in a lot of aspects of the game. But that doesn't mean the game didn't have drama. That didn't mean that it really captured your attention. And, you know, in the end, no surprises here. Robbie Keane is the MVP for a reason. New England, everybody knew they had the propensity to give up chances. And if you give up chances to L.A., they're going to finish them. You just can't allow Robbie Keane 1v1 with the keeper in extra time. And, of course, the big story, Landon Donovan going out on top. So a nice ending for him, a nice ending for MLS. Personally, I think it would have been better for New England to win the title long term. I just think having an Eastern Conference team, having a franchise, an original like the Revolution, one that's really starting to build some momentum, having them win the title would have really served the league well and the Eastern Conference well over the next 5 years. But certainly no reason to be disappointed to see the Galaxy and Landon Lift that they now have entered certainly dynasty status, and I think probably unquestionably the best team in MLS history based on the last 4 years.
Absolutely. Status of the league good, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think obviously everything moving forward. I don't think anybody would debate that. You see news here on this Thursday morning, the D.C. stadium plan is pretty much locked in, going to get done. Obviously, they have a final vote to take care of, but the mayor's office saying finance has been agreed upon, and that is the big hurdle, of course. So, you know, you have that stadium coming up. You'll have one in San Jose. You'll have some new teams coming into the league next year in Orlando and New York City FC. Orlando will be getting their new stadium, not this year, next year, but the next in 2016. So lots of reasons to be positive, lots of reasons to be happy with the way everything's going. Now we just sit down, buckle in, and wait to see how this offseason goes, see what players come our way for an enjoyment in 2015.
Quick yes or no. Do you think if the Revs were to move to Boston with the soccer-specific stadium in mind, should they rebrand?
I don't think so. I think maybe you look at messing around with the logo, but I think the Revs as a brand, as an idea, I don't think you change that. Maybe you modernize the logo a little bit. You know, I know they're one of the teams that have not tinkered hardly at all with theirs since 96. But if they move to Boston, if they get a place there on the transit lines, if they have their own facility, man, I think this team can really take off. And you know, they need to hold on to Lee Wynn. Obviously, Jermaine Jones in the mix now. I think Jay Heaps is one of the best young coaches in the league, and he's a great hire by the Crafts, one that was panned at the beginning. I'm sure that I even had some negative words to say about it based on his lack of experience, but he's proven that doesn't matter, that he's the man for the job. So I think if they can get that stadium, you're going to see them really, really start pushing forward and rising, and that's good to see.
Andrew Wiebe with us this morning on the Pitch Invaders podcast. All right, let's talk about one of the losses for New England. I mean, you get sucker punched when you lost the game, and now you lose Patrick Mullins, second to New York City in the MLS expansion draft yesterday. Let's look at the first couple of first picks, though, for both teams. Neb Grabovoy is going to New York. Donovan Ricketts is heading to Orlando. Pretty big picks, Andrew. How do you feel that both will pan out for both franchises?
Well, we'll start in New York, and I think this was kind of a no-duh pick from the entire draft. And pretty much everybody knew that once RSL couldn't protect all those their core guys, that the Jason Kreis, of course, the guy who built that team, was going to come in and raid them a little bit. You know, it makes perfect sense. You need some MLS vets. You need some guys that know the ropes, that know the league, that can be leaders in your locker room. Grabovoy fits that to a T, so you figured he'd go off the top. And, of course, Chris Winger taking 10th. He's a New York native. That was another no-brainer for them. Donovan Ricketts, a little bit of a head-scratcher for me, though, as far as Orlando City goes. You have Tally Hall, who I know is coming off an injury, who won't be available immediately in 2015. But I guess my thought was that you would go out on the market in this instance, at least in the expansion draft instance, and grab a young goalkeeper with starting potential or one with good trade value. You know, Ricketts is 37 at this point in his career. He's got a sizable contract, so now you have both he and Hall. You've got a potential goalkeeper controversy in the middle of the season when Hall comes back. You've got a guy who's on his last legs probably as a pro, and sitting out there is a guy like Zach McMath, who's a young, talented goalkeeper that maybe you can bring in to compete with Tally Hall, that's not quite such a veteran battle there and doesn't hit your cap quite so hard. There's some other guys in this draft that were very good as well, guys like Brian Mira and the like. So he, of course, now has landed with New York City FC in a trade this morning that came down. Sal Zizo picked up in their expansion draft, headed to the Red Bulls, and Mira back on a year-long loan. So that one's a head-scratcher for me. Ricketts, not so sure about that one, but you see both these teams have different strategies for this draft, and they executed them in different ways.
One guy that sticks out to me, sticking with Orlando here, Andrew, is Tony Cascio, 24-year-old kid. Went on a loan this year, came from Houston. He's along with a lot of midfielders, young guys that went to Orlando City. Which one for you sticks out as somebody that could really pick up the pace with Orlando City and make that team just continue to be explosive and quick, which is, I think, what they're hoping to be, right?
Well, I mean, let's start with Tony Cascio, and this is one that baffled a lot of people. It was kind of, why would you pick a guy who's been just killed by injuries over the last couple of years? Well, the reason is that Tony Cascio played under Paul McDonough, the VP of Soccer Ops, there in Orlando at UConn. And look, it's easy to forget, but in 2012, he was one of the best rookies in the league. 3 goals, 3 assists. People figured this trajectory is on the way up. Of course, injuries derailed all that. So he's an exciting player if they can get him back, if they can get him healthy. But as far as all the guys they chose here on this day, that I think the one that would excite me most if I was them, oh boy, it's tough. I think it's Heath Pierce, because Aurelien Collin comes in and you know you need a thinker next to him. That's the role Matt Beasler has filled all these years, the guy that can read the play behind Collin's aggressiveness, his ball winning. And although I think that he has lost some steps over the last couple of years, he's had some injury issues and the like, he's the type of player that you want to play next to Collin. Now, that's not to say he's a guaranteed starter. I think they'll go out on the market and look for more and guys to compete with him, but he's a good pick. Julia Lalibaba, he would have been a good pick, but of course he's flipped to KC, at least reports are saying that, reports I believe as well by Sam McDowell of the KC Star. He'll be headed to KC in that Collin deal. Lewis Neal's also an interesting guy. DC United player, hasn't been a starter the last couple years, but you have to remember he was a real standout for Orlando City when they came into USL Pro that first season. So he's coming back home, he's reuniting with some guys. Pedro Ribeiro, interesting. I don't understand the Harariyeta pick. Just unless he's trade bait, I'm not sure how that one fits in. Same thing for Danny Mwanga. Maybe they think there's something there that can be brought out of him. Yeah. Then, of course, Eric Berrig already flipped away as well, and Mark Sherrod, a talent, but expected to be traded. I mean, really the theme here is it's about value. You pick guys that you either think you'll keep and can play, and that's the secondary focus, but really the primary focus is to get guys that you can trade for something that you can keep accumulating assets. Because remember, these teams have to build full rosters. So just getting 10 guys in the expansion draft isn't necessarily always the best way to get that done.
Jumping over to New York, Pat Mullins is interesting to me, and it's not a bias that I'm trying to have here because we're in New England and we saw what he did during the year. He's a genuinely, in my opinion, good player, and I thought he stepped up big time in the Cup Final where he helps create that goal for Chris Tierney. So what do you think that he can take away from New York? Because now he's playing in a situation with David Villa and world-class players, and, oh, yeah, nice 10-day stint in Manchester in the heat of their season as well. So, you know, talk about Pat Mullins and sort of the experience that he's going to get, and is he a Claudio Reyna mold guy that they're trying to build here?
Well, I think if you're Pat Mullins, you're ecstatic. You know, you probably didn't want to leave New England, what with kind of the forward exodus going on there, but I mean, the writing was on the wall with Charlie taking the starting spot at the end of the year. You go in and you get to learn under a guy like David Villa. And Pat Mullins, I agree with you. He's got plenty of ability, plenty of talent. I think guaranteed years on his contract scared some teams off in the super draft, and New England, I have to imagine, were ecstatic to get him.
Right.
I think he could play up top with David Villa in a two-forward system. He's got better hold-up skills than a lot of people give him credit for. We saw him that at MLS Cup, the assist on the goal, as well as a couple other plays you know, to hold on to the ball in tough situations and let the Revs get up around him and let them possess a little bit. He's got to be ecstatic. New York City FC has got to be really, really happy about that one as well. He was one of the guys that I thought was a shoe-in to get taken in this draft, and there he goes. And then the other guy from New England, Tony Taylor, kind of follows the mold that the NYCFC went with. Either they were going to get guys that they could trade, guys like Daniel Lovitz, guys like Sal Zizzo, right, or they were going to go with young, low-cap number guys with a lot of potential that haven't really got an opportunity. And Tony Taylor is a guy that not many of us know much about because he spent so much time in those Portuguese lower divisions before coming back to New England and didn't get a sniff. So maybe Jason Christ sees a guy there that he can develop, that he can build up, that he can maybe turn into something. Two guys from New England that the New York City are betting on, both in the attacking side of the ball.
All right, and Sal Zizzo, we just had some news come in this morning about Zizzo and New York Red Bulls. Why don't you update the people, Andrew, about what the situation is there?
Yeah, one of those classic value picks, and it seems that Ryan Mira is going to stay close to home. He needed some games. We saw his potential in his rookie season, but Luis Robles really took it over for the Red Bulls. So he heads to New York City FC on a year-long loan, one of those intra-league loans in MLS for young players that need time. The same kind of loan Tony Cascio was on, actually, to Houston. He cannot play against the Red Bulls. That's the one stipulation of that. But going the other way is Sal Zizzo, who has a lot of potential. Another guy kind of like Tony Taylor, who spent his early days in Europe and came to MLS, has been here for 5 years. Never really got it going from injury, but a guy with a lot of potential, somebody that maybe the Red Bulls think can be a depth guy for them on the outside.
Speak about loans real quick, if you don't mind, Andrew. Do you think we're going to start seeing more intra and interleague loans within MLS?
I'm not so sure that we're going to see a whole lot more. I don't think so far it's kind of a trend that teams haven't really been able to take advantage of the way that some people thought they would. I think also with the USL Pro addition, there may be a point here where the interleague loans just don't make sense, because you want to have the guy underneath your umbrella playing with you. You get to monitor his development. If something happens on your senior roster, you get to pull him off. But the thing about the interleague loans you have to remember is they have to be a full year. So you're essentially giving that player away for a year, and that's a tough sell. You can do it with a guy like Ryan Mira, because you say to yourself, look, we have Robles. Mira's just not going to get any games for us. So we want to get him up to that level. We want to get him in MLS. We want to build for the future. And I think if you're the Red Bulls, you're certainly thinking down the line here, Ryan Mira, a hometown guy, he's probably our future at goalkeeper. It makes sense in that situation, but I struggle to see a ton of other situations where you figure, okay, this guy can be an MLS contributor, but we're going to send him on loan to another team to do that. It's really a case-by-case basis, and I think what we've seen so far in the history of this mechanism is that there just haven't been a ton of cases that really match up well with it.
Final one before I let you go, Andrew. Do you think we're going to see a big time move between either Orlando or New York before either team kicks off in 2015, whether that be another player or a coach announcement or something to do with building the franchise? Do you think any more big news is on the way with these expansion franchises?
I'll go ahead and guarantee it. Not that I know anything specifically at this time, but look at New York City FC. They've got two DPs right now. Their public intent is to have three. So you would expect that they'll get another one. And, of course, the Lampard news coming down will be big no matter what it is, whether he stays with Man City or he comes back or he skips preseason. That's going to be something that everybody pays attention to. And on Orlando's side, they're still sitting there with just Kaká on the DP side. And we know that they've made overtures to spend some additional money. So we'll have to see how that goes. Either way, both teams still have rosters to build. I think we'll see a ton of international signings from New York City FC. Certainly probably some guys coming over from Manchester City, those young guys that have been mentioned. These teams have a long way to go. The rosters are not built yet. So I would expect that we'll have a lot of exciting news to talk about in the coming weeks and months with both these clubs.
All right. Great as always. Catch him on Sirius XMFC, Andrew Wiebe, and make sure with the combine and everything leading you into MLS Super Draft, you're locked into MLSsoccer.com and follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew_Wiebe, Wiebe. Andrew, a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Happy holidays to you and your family, and happy new year. Hopefully we'll talk to you on the other side in 2015.
Yeah, man, let me know. I appreciate it all.
All right. Again, thank you to Andrew and Mike for making everything possible, giving us a lot of good nuggets today. I mean, listen, there is a lot of still swelling emotions, but you have a lot to look forward to. It's not like We, as I said earlier, just turn it down. There is a lot to move forward and on to with 2015 looming. Combine coming up here, folks. A couple more shows before we do have to say goodbye, though, for 2014. So stay tuned to the Twitter page, at Podcast Invaders. We'll have a lot more news coming along the way. Again, thank you to Andrew and Mike. We'll see you next Tuesday on the Pitch Invaders podcast. Peace. Remember when I broke it down to tears?